Well, as we've been thinking this morning, we're looking at this growing church series at the moment, and this is part of our bigger vision. I think we have a picture of that on the screen as well, that we have this 2020 vision to be a church that's focusing on mission and going out from our buildings into the community, to be celebrating our diversity and the wonderful mixture of people and ages and backgrounds that we have here in the church, to be embracing those on the margins of our society, as we saw Jesus doing, and growing as followers of Jesus. And it's the growing part that we are thinking about at the moment. I want to show you another picture on the screen of the lawn in our garden. Now, it is grass, I promise you. There is some grass there. As you can see, the grass in our garden struggles. And I've been thinking a lot at the moment about growing. And the thing that the garden and this part of our garden reminds me is that growing is not inevitable. Now, our grass takes a lot of punishment from children playing football and from the snow and the ice and the sun and the rain and particularly moss. If anyone has, I'm sure there are gardeners here who can tell me how to deal with moss. You can tell me afterwards. But we have all sorts of things that are preventing this grass from growing. All kinds of things preventing it from growing. Some of them actually really quite powerful things that are holding back that grass from growing. And today in the Bible reading that Vuvu read for us, that's exactly what we see. We see powerful forces at work to stop the church growing. And if you were here last week, you'll have heard all about Saul on the road to Damascus and his conversion. And you may have picked up one of these green sheets last week. We heard about how Saul told his story. We were encouraged to tell our story. I wonder how that's gone for you. Do tell me afterwards. We saw how Ananias took the opportunity bravely that God opened up for him. We were encouraged to take our opportunities. And we saw how God was at work through the whole of that episode, and we're encouraged to trust our God in all that we do and say. Now, today, hopefully, you found a pink sheet of paper. We're going multicolored, so we're going pink this week, just with some notes about what we're talking about today. And if it's helpful for you to make some notes on there or take it away and use it as a reminder of what we've done today, then please do use that. And you'll see that this story today, I think, tells us several things about what it means to grow and experience growing pains. That's what we're looking at today, experiencing growing pains. Now, there are a few doctors here, so I won't say too much about the physical side of growing pains, because when I investigated it, someone actually said they're not real. But Jock can set us straight later on that. But we're experiencing growing pains in this passage as we look at what happens to this church in Philippi. Now, Paul, he's now called Paul rather than Saul. He's arrived in the city of Philippi, and he's there with a group of others. And back in verse 12 that we didn't read, they arrive in Philippi. They go down to the place of prayer outside the city gate, and they meet some people, and everything goes really well. There are people who listen to them. There's a lady called Lydia who becomes a Christian. There are people getting baptized, and this little church in Philippi is growing. And it must have been an exciting time to be a part of that church as new people were joining and the place was growing. And very soon, though, problems arose. And we're calling those today these growing pains that arose. And we're going to ask, what is it that God wants to teach us here at Harborne Baptist Church from the experience of this little church in Philippi? And the first thing I want to talk about is, these are on our sheets now, the first thing, that there is unexpected interference, verses 16 through to 24. The source of all this trouble started out from what must have seemed like a pretty innocuous place. Verse 16 of our reading is page 1112 in the Bible. They're going down to this place of prayer and they meet this female slave who starts shouting at them. Now, meeting a slave in a Roman colony like Philippi, that would have been very normal. Nothing unusual about that at all. But on this occasion, this woman is following the Christians and shouting at them. These men are servants of the Most High God who are telling you the way to be saved. Now you might be wondering, what's the harm in this? She's right, isn't she? These are servants of the Most High God. They are telling you the way to be saved. So why is it that Paul, down in verse 18, after he puts up with it for a while, but eventually Paul gets so annoyed that he turns around and he commands the Spirit to leave that woman. What is it that makes Paul so annoyed? Well, we have two bits of information about this woman, don't we? We know that she had a spirit by which she predicted the future, and we know that her owners were making a lot of money. So she is doubly exploited. She's been exploited anyway because she's a slave, but she's been exploited further by this spirit that's controlling her and her owners who are making money. She herself has made nothing from this. So maybe Paul is aware of that and he's annoyed because this woman is being so exploited. And that's why he turns and tells the Spirit to leave. It might also be that Paul was concerned if this little church in Philippi, as it begins and grows, if it becomes associated with this kind of fortune telling, that this would be bad news for the church. And in any case, he turns, he tells the Spirit in Jesus' name to leave, and the Spirit does. The woman is set free. And so far, everything in this story is good news. But then, the slave woman's owners, they realize their hope of making money is gone, and they drag Paul and Silas to the city authorities. And you see down in verse 20 what they claim when they get there. They say, "These men are Jews. They're throwing our city into uproar by advocating customs that are unlawful for us Romans to accept and practice." Well, they just flat out lie, don't they? They lie completely about the reason why they're not happy. They stir up racial tension. These foreigners coming over here, bringing their customs, endangering, threatening our way of life. Well, how depressingly familiar those words sound. In a week where we've had that news about Commonwealth citizens, British citizens being denied their rights, threatened with deportation, where we sense this kind of stirring up racial tension, whether here or in the rest of Europe or in America, it's becoming more rather than less common. And I know that there are people here who've experienced some of these kinds of racial prejudices. But verse 22, you see what the crowd do. The crowd join in. It's mob rule, very easily swayed. They're stirred up. Even before we had social media, it was easy to stir up hysteria among these crowds. And so Paul and Silas are thrown into jail. They're beaten and they're chained. It's unexpected, this interference. Just when things seem to be going well, suddenly from an unexpected source, trouble floods in, piles up. And so what do we learn as we think about being a growing church? I think we can learn that we can expect opposition. We can expect opposition. It's the same enemy who opposed the growth of that church in Philippi that opposes the growth of churches today. And we might not talk very much, because perhaps we're not very comfortable to do so. We don't talk very much about the devil, about Satan. And I suspect he's quite happy that we don't talk about him very much. Because we see in this story just how cunning he is. He turns a story, it should have been all about release and freedom for this slave woman who's set free. And instead it becomes a story about race, a story about hatred, and about imprisonment and beating. And so we see trouble can appear from unexpected places when we perhaps least expect it to come. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 12, "If you think you are standing firm, be careful that you do not fall. And maybe just for us, a warning to be aware, to be alert, to be ready. And we see that the things that might interfere with our growth, like that grass struggling to grow, there may be many things that interfere with our growth. It could be unwanted attention, could be false accusations, could be self-doubt, could be physical pain, could be life circumstances or relationship breakdown. Many, many things that threaten to stop our growth. But those things may threaten growth, they don't prevent growth. And that brings us on to our second part of this passage, verse 25. We've heard about unexpected interference. Now, clear vision. I think verse 25 is one of the most stunning verses in the Bible. Because Paul and Silas have been arrested falsely, accused falsely, beaten, thrown into jail, imprisoned. And then verse 25, this is their reaction. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening to them. Praying and singing hymns to God. Now, it doesn't say they were singing happy, I presume not clapping songs, because their hands may have been restrained. But they weren't necessarily happy songs. But they were singing, praying and singing hymns to God. Maybe Psalm 23 that we sang today, they sang in that prison. They weren't ignoring their problems. They were fully aware of where they were and the danger they were in. This was not an ideal position for growth. Just think about this little church. How discouraging it must have felt for the young church to have their leaders thrown into jail. That wouldn't be very productive for the new converts, would it? But Paul and Silas had a clear vision. If we go back in chapter 16 to verse 9, just back over the page in the church Bibles, we see that Paul had had a vision of a man from Macedonia saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." Paul had this vision that God had called him to be there in Philippi. And so he didn't grumble, and Silas, they didn't grumble or complain about how bad this treatment had been. They were holding on to the vision that God had given to them. Clear vision about what they had been called to be and to do. God has called us to this. God will see it through. We can't understand why we're in prison right now. But we trust, we trust, we trust in God alone. And I wonder, as we hear that this morning, we might hear that as a real challenge. That whatever the circumstances we face, whatever difficulties we face, whether in the area of health or our personal family lives or our job or anything else that is facing us today, we're called to have a clear vision of who God is and who he's called us to be. We know, don't we, that God loves us. He tells us that, he plans the best for us. And however our situation feels at the moment, the call here to trust and focus our eyes on Jesus. The clear vision that Paul and Silas had enabled them to turn this unexpected interference into an opportunity for growth. And that's where we're going in the final point, verses 26 to 34, the special effects. Verse 26, there was a violent earthquake. Now, in that part of the world, earthquakes weren't uncommon. They aren't uncommon today. But this one arrived at just that moment, shaking that prison, breaking open the doors, cracking the chains that held the prisoners down, and the prisoners were set free. Some special effect that God has put together here. Miraculous release, perfectly timed. And yet, can I show you this? Verse 27. What is the effect of the earthquake on the jailer? For the jailer, the earthquake brings death. The earthquake brings death. He's ready to kill himself because the earthquake has destroyed his prison and the prisoners are going to go free. And he knows what happens to a guard who lets his prisoners go. They are in trouble. And so rather than wait for that trouble, he feels he's just going to kill himself and prevent his family perhaps going through the disgrace. So the earthquake brings death for the jailer. But then he hears the voice, the man's voice. "Don't harm yourself," says Paul. "We are all here." And it's the voice that brings life. The voice that brings life. The jailer throws aside his sword and he calls for lights and he rushes into the prison and falls before Paul and Silas. And what must that jailer have been thinking at that moment? Who are these men? Who are these men? These men that we've been chaining up and beating, and he must have known they weren't guilty, and yet they responded in such an incredible way to their treatment. Who are they? Were those words the servant girl was saying, were those slave girl's words true when she said, "These men are servants of the Most High God. They are telling you the way to be saved." And he falls before them and he asks, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" Do you see the special effects here? The special effects aren't in the earthquake. They're in the changed lives of the followers of Jesus. It's the changed lives. That's what has the impact on the jailer. The earthquake was going to bring him death. But the changed lives of Paul and Silas bring him life, bring him to life. And I wonder your story. I was fascinated hearing Rosemary's story just now. Did you notice how many names Rosemary mentioned in her story? How many people had been significant in her coming to faith and her growing? How wonderful. I didn't know you were going to do that, Rosemary, but how wonderful. Because God so often works, not in the earthquakes and in the storms, but in the people, the changed lives of the people. And what a challenge for us today as we hear that, as we go out from here in a few minutes and go back to our homes and our neighborhoods and our works tomorrow, to be that person that will impact others, that will be the special effect in their life that will bring them to find life. Matthew 5:16, "Let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." Bring people to ask us, "What must I do to be saved?" It's the second week in a row, if you've noticed, that we've seen in Acts that as soon as somebody comes to realize who Jesus is, they're very quickly baptized. And if you'd like to talk about baptism, we baptistry here, I'd love to speak with you about that afterwards or sometime soon. But we leave this church in verse 34. We leave this little church eating together. Such a mixture of people. Lydia, the merchant of fine cloth, a rich lady from a good background. The slave woman probably was with them. Again, from a very different background. And now this Roman jailer, probably a veteran, a soldier. What a mixture of people there were in this church in Philippi, coming together, growing in and through adversity, even when there were unexpected interference was coming upon them. They had that clear vision of what God had called them to and what God wanted them to be in that place. And the special effects, not the earthquake, but the changed lives of the followers of Jesus. And so there's a question on the bottom of the pink sheet that I've given out. A verse from Philippians we're going to finish our service with in a few moments. And a question. A question there. What are the things that are holding me back from growing today? One of the things we've done with our lawn is we've banned Jacob from playing football on it in an attempt to try and revive that grass. But there may be for you something that is in your life that is just not helping you to grow, that you might need to say, actually, that needs to stop. That needs to end, because I want growth. I want to grow. What are those things that are holding you back? You might like to think later today, perhaps. Pray about that, maybe write some down. Maybe pray with somebody. If you're able to come to one of the home groups this week, I'm sure we can bring that to the groups and talk about anything that comes up there. Pray with others. Not something we're trying to do on our own, but with others, together with others.